phone lines off the hook right now. We will hear from Mike Brown as well and De'Aaron Fox. But first, been patiently waiting. Let's get to Alan. Wants to be a part of the conversation. 916-339-1140. What's up, Alan? What you got for us?
Good morning, Alan.
Good morning. Good morning.
Yeah, shout out to Simone, with all apologies to Nate, as a stellar producer. And Chris, I saw you on your video. What do we call that? A video podcast?
Yeah, the post-game live stream.
Yeah, so the beauty of that show, I saw it for the first time, the beauty of that show is on a Friday game, we're not going to hear any analysis from you guys, right? But when you go on, it gets the whole scoop, so it's pretty awesome. So for anyone who hasn't tuned in, that's a great little gig.
Thank you, Alan. Appreciate it.
Yeah, and about the game, this is coming from an eternal optimist. We got Dallas right where we want them. They think the next game is going to be a cakewalk. Mm-hmm. And I was really shocked with the defense that Dallas played. I don't know what Jason Kidd did to them, but I've never seen that team play defense like that. And Chris, if you could just pass on your tips about going at Luka to the team, that would be that would be a great thing. Anyway, I predict we win this next game, and people are going to think I'm crazy, but the Kings are going to be fired up. We're going to have Mad Fox. Yeah. And if they just play that Malik song, you know, a few times, great idea. I love that. So anyway, have a great day, you guys.
Thanks for the call, Alan. I will say this. If we're being realistic, and Alan called himself optimistic, if we're being realistic, we really thought they were going to beat the Mavs twice. Like, did we actually think that this team, the 2024 Kings, with who they've been the whole season, was going to say, you know what? We're on a roll now. We finally figured it out. Chris and I don't even do the did they turn the corner questions and segments anymore because they never seem to do so. Did we truly think they were going to beat the Mavs twice and do what they were supposed to do when they have not done that all season long?
I definitely did. I did. We had a conversation about them turning the corner defensively yesterday. I definitely thought that this team was finally over the just over the hump of inconsistency. I'm still holding out hope that, you know, this thing is not going to completely snowball down the rest of the way. I still am, at least until Friday, I'm going to say that this is hopefully a one-game blip. I have to believe that that defense was legit and they're not just going to completely forget about it after one game. I honestly did have faith that they were going to win both of these games. I thought that they were a better team than Dallas. I thought they were better coached than Dallas. And I would say yesterday, both of those things were just not true. They were not. Jason Kidd was absolutely the better coach, had the better game plan, and the players definitely executed a whole lot better than the Kings did yesterday.
Yeah.
It sounds like you didn't.
Well, I guess I would say I'm not surprised.
I'm definitely not surprised.
Yeah, I don't think anybody
thought they were going to do
it. I think optimistically, we've said the Kings, if they're going to turn this thing around, they're running out of time. And they could be playing their best ball at the perfect time, and literally the season's almost over. So in that regard, yeah, it would have been nice. But as far as what happened last night, maybe not 36 points, but this is who they've been all season long.
No, we've seen this movie, yeah.
This is exactly who they've been all season long. Let's hear from Mike Brown, who had some things to say in the postgame, and whether or not he was surprised on how things played out.
Our spacing wasn't good. Our pace in the half court wasn't good. Our cutting wasn't good. But the biggest thing is we just would not spray the basketball to save our lives. And to have four sprays against a pretty good defensive team like that is not good enough. We were 1-for-4 in sprays. And by the time we took our starters out, I think we had a total of 24 threes. And a lot of that had to do because we weren't spraying the basketball. So we obviously weren't good defensively. Luka. And Kyrie, they're great players, and they had a lot to do with it. But offensively, watching us play tonight, I'm a little surprised how we played.
Hmm. So Mike Brown is more concerned about the offense than the defense, even.
Yeah, which I think he thought they could.
Yeah,
but he does say that they're a good defense, which I don't know if he's.
Yeah,
they have been a good. They've been playing. I think both these teams, like you said, have been in a position where nobody thinks they're good defensively,
right,
or thinks they're elite defensively, but they have been playing elite defensively. So he calls them a good defense, but also says he thinks the offense could have been better. So I think that's a little bit funny.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that he's blaming it. And I won't say blaming it, but more concerned about the offense after last night. I mean, they did only put up 96 points, which is pretty abnormal. But, you know, I guess I hear him too, because, you know, this team, again, we've talked about it countless times. This team is still an offensively minded team. And if their offense isn't going to be there, you know, the Kings aren't going to win any games really where they score 96 points. It's just really tough for them to hold opponents below that. I still feel like, the defensive end is really where they let themselves down last night. I can't believe PJ Washington in that first quarter hit. Once he hit his first two threes, I was like, well, this is exactly what the Kings wouldn't want, is right. Another guy, to your point of earlier, the others start to get going and start feeling themselves early. That then pulls Sabonis out of the paint. It just wasn't from the beginning, the game did not go in the Kings' favor. And, you know, I didn't think the offense looked like it was very sharp, but to me it was because they just felt like it was completely useless. Like it felt like defensively they'd pretty much given up at one point, and it felt like, you know, they were just going to get open looks or get some good look every single time.
And they were not missing.
No. And that's got to be demoralizing.
That's what I'm saying. Offensively.
What are we supposed to do?
Right. Once it felt as if the game was starting to get away from them and they just couldn't get over the hump, because I think that first quarter, even just being down a little bit, and then at halftime, that second quarter, as you get into some of the friendly fire that the Kings got into, that second quarter, those turnovers were awful. And Malik Monk, threes are going to come and go. Yeah. I promise you, if I see another underhanded pass.
Yeah, what about that overhand one?
All of them. That's 30 feet away. What are you doing?
Yeah.
And coach has talked about that before.
He has, specifically.
It's these Zion lazazazical. Yeah. It's these lackadaisical passes that Malik Monk falls in love with multiple times.
Yeah.
Multiple times. And I don't understand.
It's always at the wrong time.
It's always at the wrong time. They tricked off multiple fast breaks. Mm-hmm. I think they only had a couple fast break points.
I think so, yeah.
They tricked off multiple fast breaks. There was one with Keegan and Keon, and they got stuck in between. And then Keegan ended up getting fouled.
Yeah.
They just looked out of sorts. I think the Mavericks, and this is what happened with a couple of the other home games. They felt like, not that they could roll the ball out, but they felt as if the Mavericks, all right, Luke is banged up, he's questionable, we'll be able to take care of business. Yeah. And the Mavericks said, no, you won't.
Yeah.
And you're going to have to give us your best foot forward. And the Kings, they weren't prepared.
Yeah.
They weren't prepared.
No, that's a good point.
That's all the way up and down. And people can say, oh, well, don't blame that on Mike Brown or blame it on Mike Brown. Mike Brown said blame him. He said it starts with him all the way down.
Yeah.
Nobody was ready for last night.
Yeah.
Nobody was ready for last night. Let's get to Will, who wants to be a part of the conversation, 916-339-1140. If you want to be a part of the conversation, what's up, Will? What you got for us?
What's up, Styles and Watkins? Man, you know, Styles, you said something I agree with at the end. But you know what? I'm vibing with Watkins today, man, because this team was not ready to play yesterday. And that's on coach. I don't care what nobody says. You know, he always talk about he want them to figure things out. Anything. They weren't ready to play. It was ridiculous. And it was on the defensive side. They're going to score points if you play better defense. And then I agree with TC. I mean, Monk had three turnovers. Sabonis had four. Sabonis got to stop letting himself get trapped and trying to get out of a trap. And he needs to throw the ball out before he get trapped. But he just keep doing the same thing over and over again. Man, and the problem with this team is you got one guy, really, to be honest, on the defensive side. And that's Keon, who gets upset when he get beat. You can see in his face, Keon is playing defense. The other guys, you score on them, they just trot back down the court. You know, HB, Murray, Keegan and those guys. They just weren't ready to play. And it doesn't make sense. You know, we're talking about five games out of seven nights. But I agree with Watkins, man. Look, none of those guys are over 30. I think HB's the only starter over 30. I mean, come on. You remember we were young like that, man. We could run all day. We could play every night. Come on, man. That has no excuse. If they weren't ready, be honest, Styles and Watkins, be honest. They were not ready to play. You can see that, man. It was embarrassing. And then those guys were hitting uncontested threes. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't normally hit those percentages, but they were hot. And if you're wide open, and you know, guys ain't getting on you, you're going to keep shooting the threes. And they were just falling. The Kings' problem is defense. They don't have a dog. They don't have a – I was watching the Warriors score, the Warriors in Miami.
Yep.
The Heat had that game under control until crazy what's his name? Draymond kind of wrapped his arm around Patty Mills' neck and kind of choked him a little bit.
Yeah.
Sometimes you got to change the momentum in the game. You ain't trying to hurt somebody, but you got to make – like Luka. Luka need a hard foul sometimes. You got to make these – we don't – basketball is physical – psychological, and it's you know what I'm saying, man.
Yeah.
It's just Dallas just had a flow. They didn't stop the flow.
Yep.
They didn't foul nobody hard. I don't think HB ever fouls anybody hard. They just too soft, man. I mean, they got to get a physical like Keon. They got to be pissed off when they get beat, but nobody shows any emotion when they get beat. That's what I got to say.
Thanks for the call, Will. Yeah, we're not going to sit here. And this is what the Packers guy got in trouble during the NFL playoffs.
That's right. Yeah. About condoning injury.
Condoning injury. And I know that's not Will,
no.
What Will means.
No, it's not.
It's just old school, hard nosed.
Man, if you're
going to
drive the lane, you're
going to
feel it. Yeah.
And you're definitely not getting no and
make
one.
You think about it.
You're definitely not getting no and one. It felt as if they were the refereeing, which we haven't really talked about, letting the boys play, not letting the boys play. Nobody took anybody out of their flow. And
that
isn't who the Kings are, right? The Kings are just hoping to stay in their flow, and they never got in one. And the game did not really get mucked up versus that Sixers game, which had terrible pace.
No fun.
We got out of that. We got out of the game last night at 9:30.
Yeah, I was shocked. I looked at my phone. I was like, wait, it's 10:15.
You know, there was
just 10:30.
There was no fouls. There was no nothing. It was just, okay, you want to take this shot? I hope you miss. And they did not miss.
Here's maybe one of the worst numbers for the Kings yesterday. That third quarter where everything went off the rails, to Willie's point and to what you just said, one foul the entire quarter. One foul. That just means that you weren't playing physical enough.
Yeah.
It's okay. You can live with a foul if it means that you're playing too physical or you're trying to get guys off their line or out of rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
One foul for the entire team in the entire quarter as the other team scored, 38 points?
Get Duarte in there.
Nothing? Not even like a hard bump or nothing? 38 points?
Yeah.
38 points in that third quarter.
Get Duarte in there. We know Luka runs hot. Try to throw him. I know, when he gets pissed, he's good. They say that about every player, and it's not
Mad
true.
Mad Fox, remember?
Right. It's not true for every single player. So you got to change up the momentum. You ever play 21, and when somebody's on a roll in 21, maybe you roll them the basketball, or you throw it with a different hand.
Bounce it
Do
super
something.
High. Yeah.
Do something. Someone on the text line has another thought as to why the back-to-backs, we're doing the back-to-back thing again, why the back-to-backs may not be ending the way that we would hope if you're a Kings fan. And also, Fox has some things to say in the postgame, and we hear more from Coach Mike Brown. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports. Someone on the text line, Chris, at 916-339-1140, if you want to be a part of the conversation, call in, text in, also the Sack Chat. Check us out on YouTube, Sacktown Sports, and tell your friends about the fastest-growing show in Sacramento. As we get you ready for the Kings playoffs, and we're going to keep saying playoffs, not playing. Chris, this is a new one. I guess not really a new one. Essentially, the 530 is saying that they failed on back-to-backs versus other back-to-backs because of how the Kings play. The Mavs play at a much slower pace than the Kings.
Sure.
So the Kings off of back-to-back
right.
and the Mavs off of back-to-back. Also off a plane is not the same because the Kings are running. I would say this one probably cancels out because the Jazz had to travel. Luka was questionable. And the Kings, I know it was a short break, but the Kings did get to rest their guys at about the 4 or 5 minute mark two nights ago against the Sixers. So I think there is some validity there in what the 5-3-0 is saying, but in this situation, I don't know if that's why they lost, because they were more tired.
Yeah. In general, I will say the back-to-backs have killed the Kings. Looking at the numbers, they're now 6-7 on the season on the second night of back-to-backs. They score 111 on the first the second night of back-to-backs, where if they, for example, they have one day of rest, they're averaging 119 points. They shoot their lowest percentage of any other rest day on back-to-backs from three and from the field. On the opponent's side, they allow the most points on 0 days of rest, allow just under 50% from the field and 43% on threes with 0 days rest. So, you know, there is some validity to the fact that the Kings have been really bad on back-to-backs this year.
You think it's because of how they play?
I'm sure it plays a factor into it for sure. I mean, there is a lot more sprinting on the Kings than really any other team that I see. But sure, I guess so. But it also depends on, you know, things you can't factor. Like, because the Kings run so much all year, are they more conditioned to it? Like, you know, you can't really gauge where guys' stamina levels are at. You know, it's not obviously not a video game. We can't see how the Kings running the night before affects them more or less than Dallas. I would assume so. It makes sense logically, but again, you have to factor in, you know, maybe the fact that they're conditioned to it at this point, and in a weird way, it's all just kind of neutral.
I don't really want to get into that simply because that feels like a foundational problem.
Sure.
And if you're building a team that is going to gas out essentially towards the end of the season, that feels like an issue.
Yeah, let me check.
Feels like an issue
to me. I'll check the pace numbers, and I'll see if there's any correlation between it. But I wouldn't think so. I would think that probably the fastest teams in pace are teams like, you know, the Celtics and probably Denver, maybe the Pacers too. Yeah. And, you know, those guys don't – I'll check their back-to-back numbers, but they don't struggle in general throughout the season. So it makes sense, but I don't think it ends up factoring out that way.
916-339-1140. Let's get to Patrick in Hawaii.
Ooh.
Who wants to be a part of the conversation. What's up, Patrick? What you got for us?
Hey, guys. I love the conversation right now, and I just wanted to say that I think the Kings are looking like a top-notch team right now. They really do. They're looking good.
Even after last night?
You know, man, I've seen better performances, but still, I think it was close enough to say, like, you guys are still a playoff racing team. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. I mean, you know, the season's it's not over yet. It's not over yet.
And, thanks for the call, Patrick. Enjoy that weather out there.
I know. Yeah, for real. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And appreciate you listening out there. There's got to be a lot of great things to do out there. So we appreciate you taking the time to
check us out while on the beach.
36-point loss. So.
That's right.
Calling really from the Big Island.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Might be calling back.
That's awesome.
I think that's him again.
That's awesome. But yeah, I definitely think that. You know, the season's not over. It definitely doesn't feel good, but you know, you can't let one game ruin your whole perception of this team. Again, the Kings can't dwell on this because of how many tough opponents they have coming up, man. Like, they got the Celtics, they got OKC, they got the Pelicans, they got the Clippers.
It's not getting easier.
They can't feel bad about it. They can't feel like, oh, we just lost to the Mavericks in a really big game we couldn't get up for. I guess we're not that good. No, they got to shake it off. And by Friday, they got to be looking like the team that we've seen the past couple weeks. Because if that team shows up and if that team can take that lump and then return back to form, man, I do think that the Kings are going to surprise some people down the stretch, myself included. I definitely think, you know, I'm just kind of penciling them in as – hopefully around 500 the rest of this way. But, you know, if they play like how we've seen them play the last couple weeks, there's no reason why they can't beat any of the teams that they face after here. So, you know, try to not get too down after what was a really terrible performance.
Coming up next, we hear more from Coach Mike Brown and also De'Aaron Fox and what was going on with Domantas Sabonis against Derek Lively. And of course, it happens on a night where TNT actually gave the Kings some love. We will play that sound when we would get back. Styles and Watkins, Sackdown Sports. Luka can beat you, and Kyrie can beat you. And that's exactly what happened last night. We saw a couple blitzes, didn't work out very well. And apparently, Lively can shut down Domantas Sabonis. I don't know what was different. I don't know. We talked about Daniel Gafford and He really didn't even play that much. What the heck happened, Chris, against Sabonis and Lively? Why couldn't Sabonis really do anything? He got locked up.
Yeah. Sabonis was 1-4, 1-for-4 when going against Derek Lively yesterday. Completely shut him down. I mean, I think the biggest thing that he did really was, A, read a scouting report, which would tell everybody, just don't jump. If you're going against Sabonis, be as close to a boulder as you can possibly be. Just try and hold your ground. We know. I mean, we've made fun of it before, but our friend in the Bay Area was right. Like, homeboy does like to throw that shoulder,
right,
and create the separation. And, you know, if you're a defender, the worst thing you could do is get in the air and lose all of your base, essentially. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're up in the air, obviously Sabonis can create that space a whole lot easier. Lively was just like, dude, I'm 7 feet tall. Mm-hmm. Credit him, too. We've seen guys like Chet Holmgren, like his buddy Daniel Gafford.
Young guy, too.
Bullied. Just mm-hmm. get absolutely shoved around. He didn't. He held his ground, and I think that's really the biggest thing that he did against Sabonis was just, frankly, not be afraid of him. I do think that there's a lot of bigs in this league who are afraid of contact, and I think Derek Lively just showed he's not. And, you know, that's really big, like you said, from a really young guy in this league to just not be afraid to take elbows, to take shoulders mm-hmm. from possibly the strongest guy in the NBA. That definitely showed me something there for sure, and I give all the credit to Derek Lively because, you know, it doesn't mean it was easy, but he stood in there and he took every single blow and really didn't look like he gave up any ground last night.
He didn't. It was, and that's the thing about playoff basketball. Sabonis needs other people.
Yeah.
Sabonis needs guys to hit shots. Sabonis needs guys to help take the load off him offensively.
Yeah.
And that allows him to, oh, now it's a fake handoff. But if nobody is moving because nobody is hitting shots on the other end or the other players, it neutralizes him a bit. And it just not a bad game for Sabonis, of course, but just not enough to get it done when the other team was just so hot to trot. They were actually nationally televised game. Shaq had a lot of good things to say about Sabonis and puts him in some rare air. And then the Kings go out and put up a stinker. This is what Shaq had to say and the broadcast team on TNT about Domantas Sabonis.
Who is in the Big Man Alliance?
I will let you know.
Embiid, Jokic, Sabonis.
Yep.
We'll let more. So
AD?
De'Aaron Fox.
AD?
AD's not a big man. He's a power forward. Don't do that.
Oh, man.
No, he's a center. Don't do that.
Both teams tonight, Jamal, are shooting over 50% from three.
Tim Duncan ain't no big man either. He's a power forward.
He's in the Alliance, though.
Has that clutch gene.
So you got some love there.
He's a center.
The big man alliance with Jokic.
That's right.
Was Giannis in there?
Joel.
Was Giannis in there?
I don't know if he threw Giannis in there. It would make sense if he did.
But. And Sabonis.
Yeah, that's my guy.
And I think all of them... Not just look if Jokic is doing what he does and he's passing it out to KCP and Jamal Murray and they're all bricking, it's gonna be tough. You need your guys to make shots.
Not for Jokic. Jokic will just score. I mean, that's what makes him different.
Well, fine.
Yeah,
but
don't do that.
Yeah, don't
stop
do that.
It. Stop
don't
it.
Do don't do
stop
that.
Stop it.
Fine.
Stop
it. If Jokic is a unicorn,
he sure is.
Sabonis is still in the right.
Yeah,
he needs somebody to do something. I mean, you're not going to have Jokic score 80 points.
He can score 40. He can score 50.
All right.
It's the reality of the situation.
Chris,
that's what makes
he
him
needs
different.
Guys to make shots.
He if doesn't. He, that's what makes him different.
But if he didn't need guys to make shots, then they wouldn't have had to move off of the guys they move off
if
of
you
to
look
upgrade
in the, if you
to
look
KCP.
If you look in the playoffs, he had plenty of games where guys weren't hitting shots, and there would be, okay, we're going to make sure Aaron Gordon doesn't get what he wants. We're going to make sure KCP doesn't get open looks. We're going to force Jokic to be aggressive because Jokic doesn't want to score. And so if you take away those other options, that's what makes him so deadly is he's almost a hesitant scorer, but he'll still drop 40 on you every single time. That's what makes him different. And he's got the three, and he's got the mid-range, and he's just a load in the paint.
Well, Sabonis is still in the conversation.
He's
in the – look, it's not me saying it. It's Shaquille O'Neal.
Yeah, no, he's definitely in the conversation of the three or four best big men in the NBA.
Yeah, and, you know – He's limited in some ways as everybody but Jokic is. I liked the fact that Sabonis, he took a shot, a midi, pretty early in the shot clock, and I think it might have been the first quarter, maybe the second quarter. And initially, a lot of people would say, why are you taking that shot? That's not a good shot. I think he has to.
Yeah.
He did that a couple times last night, and I think it was once he was trying to figure out how Derek Lively was playing him.
Yeah.
And initially, I even thought, what are we doing here? We can't get something better. But the further we get in the season and closer we get to playoffs, he's going to have to. And hopefully he hits some. But he has no choice.
Yeah, no. I mean, he took two or three of them yesterday, and he missed them all. That was the problem, is he missed every single one of them. His touch just isn't there with that mid-range push shot. But, you know, yeah, if they're going to give him that shot, he has to take it. If they're going to give him any amount of room, like how Draymond was playing him in the playoffs, he's got to show the ability to hit that shot, or else teams are just going to sag off and they're going to not allow other guys to get open by cutting and force Sabonis to be in that situation. He's got to hit it. He's got to be better at it. We've seen him extend his three-point range, but, you know, realistically, it only does you so many good favors. You've got to be a three-level scorer. You can't just be at the rim and then from three. You've got to develop that mid-range free throw line jumper, and that's really the part of his game that he doesn't have yet, is just that free throw line extended jumper, and that little one-handed push shot just has no touch to it.
And I did think it was a result of, okay, I'm going to go shoulder, 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 and it looked like the Boogie Cousins meme with Karl Anthony Towns.
That's right.
Lively just wasn't moving.
No.
He wasn't moving. Sabonis wasn't really getting to the line. They were weirdly letting the boys play. Yeah. They were playing pretty straight up defense, the Mavs were, and Sabonis said, okay, I have no choice. I have to take these jump shots.
Yeah.
And once you're doing something because your bread and butter isn't working, you're not going to do it with the same confidence. So Sabonis got neutralized. When he tried to kick it out, everybody was bricking. It was a mess. Mm. It was simply a mess.
Yeah, no, it looked terrible. I mean, you had nobody else really contributing, and, you know, it does kind of tie in a bit to yesterday was a game where they needed Malik, man. I don't think it completely erases the 36-point deficit, but that team needed a jolt of energy. They needed a spark, and, you know, with Sabonis really struggling, I mean, 11 points, 10 or 12 boards and 9 assists, that's what a bad Sabonis game looks like these days. They just needed that extra pop. I mean, they didn't have De'Aaron even, you know, didn't eclipse the 20-point mark. It just felt like nobody really had it. Nobody was willing to, or was able, I should say, to put their cape on and try and make it close. And, I mean, it all started within the paint. Sabonis not being able to establish that paint. De'Aaron never really established a rim presence either. And, you know, we've talked about it before. It's you know, their drive and kick system, their spray three system is great. But it is a bit like a play action where you do have to establish the run before you run the play action. And you have to establish attacking the rim before you establish the spray threes. And they just never even established the first part. So I think once that happened, they just never really stood a chance. And then you're taking the ball out underneath the rim every single time. There was no flow at all.
I'll tell you somebody who I think did pretty darn well, and he made a couple Mavs players touched the earth, and he also hit some threes. That was Davion Mitchell.
That's right.
Davion Mitchell, I mean, the game was the game, and there was only so much he could do, and they're going to be asked to do once the game got out of hand. But Davion Mitchell was probably the main guy to me, and Keon Ellis, the two guys that were ready to play last night.
Yeah. Yeah, how about that, too? Davion making Exum touch earth.
He should have shot
it.
Filthy. I don't think he realized.
He didn't.
I think he might have turned around, and the bench was going crazy, and they didn't get a shot out of it. And look, I wish he took that shot.
I know, yeah.
I wish he took that shot.
He hit a mid-range, too, where he had a nice little move. Davion's like, he's just playing with a different level of confidence right now, and he needs it. I mean, we've seen him go through his offensive struggles for a long portion of his Kings career so far, but I think since the All-Star break, or even since the turn of the new year, he's been a 40% three-point shooter. Last night, he's 2 of 3. The other night, he hit a couple threes as well. It just feels like things are really clicking for him. And then on the defensive end, you know, last night's not really a great matchup for him with Kyrie and with Luka, but he's still able to have some defensive impact as well. So you're right. Davion and Keon were really the two yesterday that if you want to point to anybody who seemed like they were ready for what was to come, it was probably those two. But, you know, that's not nearly enough.
When we return, we will hear from Coach Mike Brown on the double team situation. Also, yes, we will play the infamous sound from De'Aaron Fox last night. And the question, we'll talk about the question and whether or not it made sense. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports. Well, there was one thing that happened last night that was viral, I'd say, and definitely memorable. If anyone remembers, what was this, Chris? And please maybe don't like forget, 12:30, we have the King's Roundtable. We will get the guys' thoughts on everything that went down last night on and off the court. Brendan Nunes and Frankie Cardicelli. Yeah, it was, what do you mean, 2 months ago?
It was in February, I think.
Really? Podium Gate was
it might have
in
been
February?
January. I feel like, because wasn't it after an OKC game or something?
It was definitely January.
Let's see here. They lost. Oh, you know what? It started after the play-in, right? I think like the play-in was the first time it happened, and then it kind of spiraled after that.
Just look up a Pelicans or Rockets game.
Yeah, I see a Pelicans 33-point loss in January. Yeah,
come on,
Pelicans. Come on.
And when was that?
That was January 7th. They then beat the Pistons and the Hornets and then lost to the Sixers, Bucks, Suns, and Pacers.
Okay, so somewhere
around there.
Somewhere in that mix, Podium Gate started.
Right.
Where?
I think it was late December.
Really, you know, media, and we've discussed on this show pretty openly about how fans feel about media and how fans are always going to connect to players over the media, when in media's mind, they're trying to get the fans information.
Yes.
So there's always been a disconnect there, but fans don't see it that way. Some fans don't read articles. Some fans don't care. They just want to watch their team play, and they're going to defend their guys. So Podium Gate started where there were games in which the Kings got blown out, and the leaders of the team or the perceived leaders of the team did not speak. It was two-way guys and guys that really didn't have much to do about the game.
Right.
We went back and forth about it. Should there be some accountability there? Do you care? Do you not care? This got brought back up last night under the guise of positivity that De'Aaron Fox had been showing up to these bad games, these blowouts. And the question was asked whether or not it was kind of a conscious decision. Essentially, De'Aaron, basically how I took it was, De'Aaron, are you making sure you come out here during these games versus PR, the team asking you to come out? And this is what De'Aaron Fox had to say.
De'Aaron, we've for quite a while now, you've come out and you know, addressed like some of your bigger and you know, maybe more difficult losses. Is this like something you're kind of making a point of doing for some reason in turn, you know, just leading this team and kind of showing that accountability? And
as far as talking to y'all?
Yeah, just, you know.
I don't get shit out of that. Okay. I don't get nothing out of that. They ask me, I do it.
But for the team, so it really doesn't mean anything in terms of
They don't give a f- I come up here and talk, I tell you that. But nah, I mean, if Michael asked me, I do. If Michael or Shannon asked me, I do it.
Okay, well, they're good.
I get no joy in this after a win or a loss. My team doesn't care if I come up here in a blowout win or a blowout loss. So,
sorry I brought it up.
I mean, it is what it is.
So I was in there.
Yes.
And you were doing the post game. And when I tell y'all, I sprinted. I literally sprinted upstairs to tell Chris what happened. I had to. Chris was wrapping up. He was wrapping up the post game, and I had to sprint up there to tell Chris what had just happened. And the vibe essentially was he was smiling. He was smiling. Don't get me wrong. He was smiling, but you could tell De'Aaron had that in the chamber for a while.
Yeah.
When I first heard it, did I think it was a very timely question? Not really.
Right.
I mean, it felt like we had moved on. Podium Gate had ended. But you could definitely tell that De'Aaron had, and Chris and I were joking as we're walking back to our cars, he had pocketed that from months ago. if anybody asked me about this, I'm ready.
Yeah.
And you could tell he was ready. And we talk a lot about being a franchise guy and whether or not that matters. We're not going to spend a ton of time on this. I'm a bit torn on it. He was honest. Mm-hmm. And I think we're always going to appreciate the honesty. I think he was taken back on the question. I don't think he was expecting to get the question. I think he had something prepared in case of emergency.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the cussing is that people can say that that's him being real. It doesn't really matter to me either way. He just wanted to let everybody know. I think the bottom line is that they do not view the post-game press conferences or any media availability as, wow, this is our guy taking one for the team. It's just, who has to do it today?
Right.
Whoever comes and gets us. De'Aaron did not say, hey, guys, as we were imagining after one of their bad losses early in the season, no, Keon, you sit down. I will speak for the team.
I got this.
They do not view it as speaking for the team.
Yeah. It's not accountability to
them. It is just media availability. Yep. I'm going to answer the questions and I'm going to go about my day.
Yeah. Yeah, just try to essentially not make headlines is what it sounds like.
Well, he did the opposite.
Exactly, yeah. And, you know, I do think it's De'Aaron being real. I think that there's a lot of NBA players and just athletes in general who probably do feel that way. To me, the thing that I'm reading out of that is, A, we did kind of get an answer to, is because a part of the podium gate question was, you know, is this on the players? Is this PR? Like, how is that decided? De'Aaron pretty much says that they're like, we don't decide any of it. If they ask us, we get pulled in. It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
But also, yeah, I mean, the fact that the team, we don't need to have the conversation of leadership when it comes to holding themselves accountable or really anything said in those post-game press conferences, even the pre-games, you know, it's for the most part going to be a lot of athlete speak. It's not saying that you're not going to get anything out of it. It's just you might have to read between the lines a lot of the time because – even though these guys are apparently trying to be as boring and mundane as possible, it's still hard to avoid saying a bit of the truth. So it's, you know, I get it. I get De'Aaron. I get everybody, you know, championing him, saying like, oh, this is so real. This is so awesome. But I do want to caution a little bit. There is still a lot of positive in media. And it's interesting to me that, you know, people don't really talk about the value of it. Like the fact that you do get to connect the fans with what they're saying. Like the media is really just meant to be a microphone for the fans. It's meant to be, hey, almost like a middleman of, hey, fans are wondering this. Let me ask you about it. And then the players on the other end saying, hey, fans don't get this level of access. Let me tell you things that you might be wondering about. And so I still think there's value in media, and I'd like to just push back a little bit and say, you know, I would hope that some of the players don't just look at it as this is a chore. Let me give them nothing, because I do think there's a lot of fans out there, especially with when you cover a team like the Kings that don't have a ton of national media or just don't have a ton of, you know, media in general. How else are fans supposed to get the information they want?
To be fair, and even after that question, he said it with a smile. Yeah. There was,
and he does it every time.
Yeah,
too. I'm not bashing him not wanting to do it.
There was towards the end, it was somebody I think in the media said appreciate you, and he said, oh, you know, it's all good. It was kind of awkward, but not terrible. It wasn't contentious.
Yes,
I wouldn't say. And he was not in a terrible mood prior to that question or after that question. He answered the questions. I think the main thing is if you ask big picture questions, you're going to get big picture answers. We got to be better. They're going to say that. But if you ask about what specifically happened, he'll tell you. I mean, he told us before that question, Luka hit some threes. We overreacted to those threes.
Yeah.
So we came up on him. And then even though Luka, he doesn't look like he is the fastest dude in the world, he's strong. He uses that off arm. Once he gets downhill, then the world is his oyster.
Right.
That's what happened.
Yep.
And me sitting there watching the game, paying attention, did I realize it? Kind of, yeah. But just hearing it from De'Aaron made it more clear.
Yeah.
So I do think if you ask the right questions – they will give you the right answers. Yeah. But sometimes when you get into these big picture questions, that's when you're going to get the athlete speak.
Right.
So, yeah, I don't really have a problem with what – it's nothing that we didn't already know from De'Aaron. I mean, it's not as if – when LeBron gets interviewed, you could tell LeBron loves being interviewed, okay? Not everybody is like that. And De'Aaron is not like that, and that's his prerogative. Yeah. He's out there to play basketball. There's things that come with it, but he does take care of the things that also comes with it. When we return, we will hear about the double teams and why they were not that successful. And I know Chris has a mini grin here because he told us they wouldn't be successful against the Mavericks. Mike Brown has some things to say about it. Styles and Watkins, Sackdown Sports.